Hi, this is Carrie.
And this is Sandy.
And you're listening to
Crime Bitches Countdown,
where every other week we'll be discussing a different crime category and telling you the 10 most interesting cases, at least according to us. For this week's category, we decided to veer away from murder and onto a different type of criminal, arsonists. For those that don't know, an arsonist is a person who deliberately sets fire to property. According to the National Fire Protection Association, arson is the leading cause of fire property damage in the U.S., which annually results in a cost of over $2 billion. That's a crazy lot amount. Over 500,000 fires are intentionally set every year, and of that, two-thirds of them are actually set on occupied buildings. Apparently, abandoned places are the place to be, if you want to stay away from a burning building. Surprisingly, 50% of intentional fires are set by children. So remember, keep those kitties away from the matches. 86% of arsonists are male, with the major motivating factor being money, right? Oh no, think again. It's revenge. The burning love from your next boyfriend could result in the burning down of your house if you're not careful. But let's not speculate. We'll let Sandy count down some interesting arson cases. Take it away, Sandy.
All right, so for our first case, I am going to tell you about Paul Keller.
Okay.
He was born in 1966 in Everett, Washington. His family was devoutly Lutheran. He was fascinated by fire at an early age. He actually set a neighboring vacant house, thankfully, on fire when he was like 8 or 9.
At least it was vacant, but that just leads to bad things to come.
8 or 9. I mean, like, that's... I don't even think I knew what a match... No, I probably knew what a match was, but...
Yeah.
Later, he alleged that he was sexually abused by a firefighter when he was, like, 12 years old.
Hmm.
I don't know if that was supposedly, like, a motive for him to be an arsonist. Like, I'm not 100% sure on that. In August 1992, he started a six-month arson spree. He mostly targeted retirement homes, houses, and businesses in Seattle. Caused over $30 million in damage.
Dang.
Three senior citizens died as a result of a fire he started at the Four Freedoms House. Bertha Nelson, who was 93, and Mary Doris, 77, they both died of smoke inhalation.
Oh.
But he was also charged for Adeline Stockness, who was 72. She had a seizure during the fire.
Mm-hmm.
She was found by firefighters. And so she was alive, but then she had a heart attack, and the coroner said it was because of the fire.
Right.
So he ultimately was charged with her as well. A behavioral profile and a sketch was released to the public, and his father, George, actually called and turned him in.
Wow, good dad.
Yeah, and what's kind of cool about that, too, is there was a reward for $25,000, so he got the reward.
Oh,
and he
good.
Donated it directly to the Trinity Lutheran Church, which was a church that Paul had actually burnt down.
Aw, that's
so
awesome, though.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you can't make up for what your kids do.
Yeah.
But
it was nice that, you know, he tried.
Yeah, very... So, initially, Paul said he didn't set the fires, and the investigators played their games like they do.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, oh, but we're so impressed. We've never seen anything like this.
What?
And he said, oh, okay, I set 76 fires.
Whoa. So, how do you go from saying, no, I never set a fire, I set 76?
Well, when people think you're hot shit, I mean...
Like, again, we're talking about dumb criminals. This is an investigator. They want you to admit stuff. Don't you realize they're baiting you?
You're being manipulated.
Yeah.
Like, do you really think they're impressed by you? They've probably seen, like, 50 better people than you.
Right.
Just saying. But whatever. Ultimately, even though he confessed to 76 fires, there wasn't enough evidence. So he only pled guilty to 32 fires.
Dang.
And he
still.
He got sentenced to 75 years. Now, as we talk about some of these cases, you're going to see, like, I'm going to get a little irate.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we've talked about with sentencing before,
mm-hmm.
he got 75 years for 32 fires. 32 fires is a lot.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of damage, I agree. But people who kill people get less.
Yeah, which is insane.
So, this is where I have issues with our sentencing system. In addition, he did plead guilty to 3 counts of first-degree murder, and he got 99 years for that. So he will ultimately be eligible for parole in 2079, and he'll be 113 then, so I'm pretty sure it's safe that he's not going to make it.
He's not going to make it to then.
So, yeah.
Well, okay, so I have to go back to the point of he was abused by a firefighter. So, if you set fires, who's going to show up? Firefighter. So if you are abused by a firefighter, one would think you wouldn't want to be around them. Instead, let's set them so they have to show up. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me.
See, and I didn't really think about that. I was just like, oh, a firefighter molested me, so now I'm going to go destroy things. But no, maybe, your point is kind of,
again,
makes a lot of sense.
A firefighter's going to show up when you set a fire. If you just wanted to destroy things, there'd be better ways to destroy things that wouldn't allow a fire, wouldn't need a firefighter to show up. And you'd think the firefighter would trigger some trauma, but unless he liked it. And then maybe he's trying to get them to show up. I don't know. But the other thing, okay, Dad, kudos to you for turning in your kid. I understand it, that had to have been a really hard thing to do. Your kids are your kids, and you're going to love them regardless of what they do. But the guy killed people and set fire. So, like, props to you. Props to you for using the money to try and make up for, you know, one of the things, one of the buildings that he burnt down. But, Dad, 8 or 9, this kid is setting fire. And he's obviously showing a penchant to destructive behavior. What are we doing about this at that age to prevent the escalation?
Here's the thing. There are a couple of cases that we're going to go over that don't have a whole lot of information. Like, arson cases are not quite the same as murder.
Murder, of course not.
You know, is so sensationalized. There's so much more detail. There's so many more things that you can research and find. With arson, they're only usually covered by local newspapers, which is, you can still find a lot, but it's not going to be on the national level.
Right.
Now, some of them are, don't get me wrong, because some of them aren't seen. But in this case, there really was nothing that said, like, did they do anything about it or what his motives really were.
Right. Maybe he didn't have any. I mean, fire's cool. Like, maybe he just had a
passion. I like fire.
I do, too. I don't go setting buildings on fire.
No.
I can't say that when I was a kid, some accidental alleyways might have been set on. But we put them out quickly. No fire department.
At least you didn't set the trash can in your own house on fire like I did.
No, I said.
Because I totally did.
I had a candle that I used to stick, like, my old matches in. It still had some wax in it. So when I blow out the match, because I don't want to stick it, it was on a wood dresser. I didn't want to stick it on the wood dresser, so I just stuck them in the same candle. Yeah, it relit itself, and my mom was like, oh my God! So instead of doing something about it, my mom just screams. I come in and just go and blow it out.
Like, big fire.
Yeah.
See, I had a fascination with fire. Not to the level of these people.
Obviously.
I just, and you know, now I have a fire pit. I enjoy sitting by the fire, that kind of a
thing.
They're
relaxing. They're great.
They are. But I was messing around setting paper on fire, and I thought I put it out, and I put it in the trash can, and it definitely wasn't out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it caught the whole trash can on fire. And then the house smelled like burnt rubber for like days.
Rubber? What? The trash can was rubber.
The plastic.
Plastic, yes.
The garbage bag and the...
Not a good smell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So do you think my parents weren't home, so you think they figured it out? Sandy ran away from home. I got like 3 blocks and then I turned around.
Burnt plastic smell in your house. That's a hard one to cover.
I forget how old I was. I want to say like 11 or 12 or something.
I think a lot of kids, you know, as you're getting to be your teenage years, everybody has like a little bit of fascination with fire to a certain degree. But you usually do something small, it blows up in your, not actually blows up in your face, but it goes kind of wrong and you learn your lesson. Like one time I actually, like I was sticking my finger in the wax and I accidentally burnt my nail. And
I love you.
Oh, burning nail, not
so
a good
gross.
Smell. Oh, God.
Oh, it's like burning hair, but
yeah,
worse.
Yeah, yeah, it was really, really bad. Not to mention that my nails charred. I was like, ooh. So yeah, I kind of learned not to stick my hands in fire after that.
Yeah, well, when I was smoking, I've accidentally lit my hair on fire a couple times.
Sorry.
Usually, I'll be outside and my hair is down, and I'd be smoking, and it would just blow into the cigarette. So yeah, that's good time. But now I don't smoke, so that's a good thing.
Yes, very.
All right, let's move on.
Yes.
Number 2. I'm going to tell you about Robert Eason. He was 39 years old and a volunteer firefighter for Capay Valley Fire Department, which was in California. P.S., you're going to notice a little bit of a trend here, and I'm not quite sure if it's because California is so dry and they have all the wildfires all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure that it contributes.
Or if it's just Californians really like fire. I'm not sure which.
Maybe a little bit of both. They're a little bit off hinge. They do live in California. Just saying.
So, Robert Eason, he set 12 fires between July and October of 2006, and shortly before he was arrested, he was actually promoted to fire captain. So you're talking about somebody who worked with fire.
What?
Yeah, that's actually quite a trend as well, which you'll see. That actually seems to happen more often than you might
So,
think.
my question is, the fires that he set, did his own department respond to? Like, was he trying to kind of be like, kind of like the Stockholm thing? Like, he was trying to be the hero, so we set the fires so that he could be the
You're
hero?
jumping ahead of me here
Oh,
because that
sorry.
is absolutely my last note.
That's awesome.
Investigators thought his motive was to be the hero.
Got it. Sorry.
Okay, so the first four fires he set were roadside fires off of Highway 16. Okay, Highway 16 is very prevalent. His fifth fire was actually big. Most of these fires were on the roadside and caught quickly.
Is he just setting the grass on fire? Is he like
Yes.
doing like the whole like teepee with the sticks thing?
No, it's mostly like setting the grass on fire.
Got it.
And because it's a highway, lots of people are
Are
going
gonna see
by.
it, yeah.
Yeah, so it got reported quickly, put out quickly. Except for his fifth fire. That wound up being a 4 foot by 10 foot fire on the grass behind some hay bales, and it was caught because the owner had happened to see it, like the smoke, and caught it in time. I mean, if he hadn't, there could have been a lot more damage.
Yeah.
Fires 6 to 8 were again roadside fires on Highway 16. He like really likes Highway 16. 7 and 8 were set the same night on Highway 16, so that was kind of special. The ninth fire was again off the road on Highway 16, but this one spread and burned 5 acres before it got extinguished.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And I think then he got a little smart and was like, maybe Highway 16 just isn't the place to go. So instead, for the 10th fire, he went to County Road 49,
Oh, different road.
but still an off-road fire. The 11th fire was the worst. That one was pretty bad. It burned for 3 to 4 hours. It
Wow.
killed over 200 sheep and burned 600 acres of land.
Oh, those poor
So,
sheep.
killed a lot of animals. And then the 600 acres of land, I mean, this was someone's farmland in addition to probably other people's land as
I was
well.
gonna say that's somebody's
It
livelihood.
is, like, he
Like,
destroyed it.
I'm sorry, but I just imagine sheep being these like really fluffy creatures. And like, imagine getting your fluff on fire and then being like, ah!
Actually, now that like I didn't have that vision in my head until you said it, but that wool's gotta burn pretty quick.
Exactly. You know, I can't imagine
These
having
poor
been
animals.
those, yeah, those sheep. Like, sadly, a lot of people in fires die from the smoke inhalation, not the fire, which honestly is probably a better way to go, sadly. But for these animals, that probably isn't what happened because
No.
they weren't in a confined space, they were in open air, and they
Nope.
were literally burning from the outside in.
And like I said, with that wool, that's gonna burn
Oh,
quick.
yeah.
So
Oh, terrible.
that's a shame.
They
The
don't teach
last,
stop, drop, and roll to sheep.
maybe we should. We could
That
start a training
could be
class.
a thing,
You
totally.
think we could teach cows?
Cows might be difficult. Cows might be difficult. I don't think they do a whole lot of rolling. They're kind of big. Horses could do it. I bet goats could do it.
I want to get cows now.
I want to teach a cow stop, drop, and roll. I want to see if this can be done.
Anybody know any cows? Let us know.
Yeah. If you want to volunteer for us to train your cow to stop, drop, and roll, please let us know.
All
Anyway.
right, so the last fire was on the roadside again, but this was County Road 23. And again,
Switching
put
up the
out quickly.
roads.
Yeah, I mean, it only took him, what, 10 fires to realize that Highway 16 wasn't the way to go?
Probably not.
Investigators suspected a firefighter because they just thought the way that the fires were being set and how quickly they were responded to, like, it just didn't seem right. So they started surveillance, and one of the things they were using, like, the highway cameras and the traffic cams and stuff like that.
Did they check Highway 16?
They might have. I mean, it would have been a pretty big clue.
Yeah.
Just saying. They found Eason's car near several of the fire locations. Like, they didn't see him set the fires, but his car was like passing at the right time. They got approval to put a GPS tracker on his car in August of 2006, and by October he was arrested, accused of 16 fires. He got 40 years in prison, and as I said, they thought he wanted to be the hero. Wanted to save the day.
Wow, that's a hero complex if I've ever heard one. But it took them 12 fires to maybe realize they should probably stake out the areas.
I know, right? After the third fire on Highway 16,
I was going to say, after
Highway 16 seems like the place to be.
Exactly. Like, it's a little weird that Highway 16 keeps going up in flames. Even if it wasn't arson, you maybe want to watch that.
What I don't know is, like, how far apart these fires were. So, I mean, they could have literally been, like, Highway 16 could be 20 miles for all we know.
That's true, but still, I find it very suspicious on one. You said he set two fires on Highway 16 the same night. Like, I might be like, hey, this is a little weird. Just saying.
Yeah, I would have had cops out, but I guess it's not even, like, every night. So it's not like, I mean, you're over the span of months, so it would be hard to catch if the road is large enough.
And I think it's a little odd that, like, it looks like his first couple of fires were set very small so that they would be detected and extinguished quickly. But then he decided to go, like, behind somebody's property and then this other property with the sheep. Like, why though?
But it also, and that's the other thing, it didn't tell me, like, was that his intention to burn all of that, or was his intention to have the small fire and it just got out of control? Again, you're talking about California.
Right, exactly. So. But I understand him putting them on highways because they're going to get noticed. But then, did I just say noticed all weird? Anyway, sorry. But then he puts them in a little bit of more of a remote area where only the property owner is going to potentially see it. Where it's less likely to get extinguished right away. So, I wonder if his point was that he was trying to make a bigger fire to make it be a little bit more noticeable. Because he may not have been getting credit for the little ones.
And can I just say, like, if you're going to stick to the same place, maybe you wanted to get caught.
Yeah.
Like, I would be switching up my roads. Because there'd be no pattern.
Right, exactly.
Don't get ideas, people. All right. We're going to move on to number three.
Number three.
Peter J. Leonard is who we're going to talk about.
Okay.
This was a fire that took place in 1974. It was in Gulliver's Nightclub. The building, I have to explain kind of how the building is set up because it's important to understand where so many factors come into play throughout this case.
Okay. All right.
So the building was actually on the border of Port Chester, New York, and Greenwich, Connecticut. The restaurant was a bar as well, and its entrance was on the Greenwich side, but most of it was on the New York side. So when you get into jurisdiction and who has rights, that's where this becomes
a
headache.
Sketchy.
So the New York side had been inspected by fire authorities 2 months before the fire, but the Greenwich side hadn't been. It hadn't been inspected since 1969, and the reason was, in 1961, the two cities had the fire chiefs, I think, had made a agreement that the New York side would just go ahead and inspect the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the person who knew about it retired and didn't pass that information on, and so no one knew, so no one checked.
Hence the importance of documentation.
Just saying. All right, now let's talk about the inside of the building. There was a dining room on the main floor with a bar and a kitchen. And then you had a short but narrow flight of stairs that led downstairs to the lower level, and that's where the lounge was. There was also, like, a sunken dance floor there, so the stage was kind of up and the dance floor was down.
Okay.
On the ground floor beneath that...
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how this works, but...
Sub-basement?
Yeah, I think it was a sub-basement. Mm-hmm. So underneath of that was a small barber shop... small barber shop and a retail store for clothing. And then there was a bowling alley, too, and it took up half of the building on the Greenwich side.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's there's a lot going on here. All right, so June 30th, that's where we are, 1974. A rock group called Creation was playing. And this actually was Eric Carr from Kiss was part of this band.
Cool.
At the time, he went by Paul Caravello.
I understand why he changed his name.
Yeah. I don't know, I like Caravello better than Carr, but hey, whatever.
I mean, I think it's cooler, but a whole lot harder to pronounce.
True, true. So, they were playing, everything was good. A waitress said, I think I smell smoke, and so they announced it, but they were very calm about it. They said, there's a fire, you know, we need everybody to quickly and
quietly exit the
exit. Which, of course, what happens when you say fire?
People automatically scurry in all directions, act like crazy. God.
So that whole calm and quietly thing went right out the window. And the smoke spread so quickly, it actually looked as like the power went out because everything just turned black so quick.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people actually thought the power did go out, but it didn't. They found clocks later in the ruins that stopped at 1:50 a.m., so they knew that's what time the fire was. Because of the heat, patrons couldn't get to the stairs, which was the only way out. And so many people were rushing the stairs.
Of course, you're
So,
gonna get trampled.
they were narrow as it was. People couldn't get out. Eric Carr, the guy from Kiss, he tried to save his bandmates. They were trapped.
Oh.
Sarita Henderson, she was able to get saved, and the two of them had to climb over bodies just to get out.
That's insane.
But Damon DeFries, who was the keyboard player, and George D. Chase, who was the singer, it was too late for them. 19 fire companies responded to the fire, which is quite a
Wow,
bit. I
that
mean,
is. That's
now
impressive.
you're talking about like right on the border of New York and Connecticut, so I get
So,
that to a degree, but 19's still a lot.
yeah.
It took anywhere from 90 minutes to 4 hours to get the fire under control. So many differing reports, it's hard to say which one that actually is.
Yeah.
At the time, there had been about 200 people there. The only, and I don't want to say good thing, but only 24 people died, which is still too many.
Of course, yeah.
Most were found at the foot of the stairs or on the dance floor.
Wow.
All of them were ruled to have died of asphyxiation. So, I mean, kind of like we were saying earlier, better that they die from that than burning.
Exactly, yeah.
An additional 19 people were injured and 13 firemen were injured.
Wow. So where did it actually start?
Well, let's talk about that. Why do you always go right ahead of me?
I am psychic. I know where you're going.
So it looked like the fire started in the nursery of the bowling alley that was in the basement.
Well, nursery in a bowling alley.
Which
That's
I
interesting
know, I was
concept
like,
by itself.
yeah.
I want my kids around loud ass bowling balls hitting pins. That's not troublesome at all.
I just thought
Anyway.
maybe I don't understand the 70s. Like, I don't know. Because when I read it, I was like, nursery? Like, kids? Wait, maybe plants. No, kids.
No, because you said it was like underneath, right?
Yeah.
So plants wouldn't survive there.
Nope.
So yeah, babies. That's better. Babies.
So, and the location became so important because of the border issues.
Yep.
And it was an argument over who had jurisdiction. So Paul was only like 22 years old. He dropped out of high school. He was unemployed at the time. He was arrested by Connecticut authorities on July 12th. He had been stealing from the bowling alley cigarette vending machines, remember them, and set the fire as a way to cover up the burglary. So, no intentions of burning things down, but that's what happened. June.
How does that cover up the burglary?
I mean, right? Like, I guess he figured if the vending machines burned, like, they would just think
Is
they
the
lost
vending
the.
machine gonna tell on
I'm assuming he just assumed they
Like the
would.
stock versus the amount of money? Yeah,
Yeah.
maybe, but then, like, again, weird.
Right. And to cover it, like, I don't know. I would just do the burglary and leave. Like,
Yeah, exactly. Why stick around?
why set the fire? But that's what he did. In June of 1975, he pled guilty in exchange for a reduced sentence of 15 years to life. In 1925,
Reduced from what?
25 years to life.
Oh, got it.
In 1977, the conviction was overturned because they said his confession had been coerced. In 1978, a jury found him guilty of 24 counts of murder and also convicted him of arson, burglary, and petty larceny. The verdict was again overturned in 1985 when they said that self-incriminating statements had been made without a lawyer present. And in 1986,
Wait, you're not allowed to incriminate yourself unless you have a lawyer?
look, there are loopholes to everything.
Dang.
And I don't fully understand why that is because.
Because they ask for confessions from people all the time without lawyers.
Well, and you made incriminating statements. That doesn't, like, if you didn't ask for a lawyer.
Yeah, that's your own fault.
But
Anyway,
I don't
moving
fully
on.
know why. So in 1986, prosecutors were like, fuck this shit. We've done this multiple times now. And they agreed to a guilty plea of second-degree manslaughter. He was sentenced to 15 years. But in New York, inmates with good records were released after having served two-thirds of their sentence. So he pretty much got out because he'd already been
What?
in jail for like 10 years.
But he murdered unintentionally, mind you, 24 people.
Yeah, who cares about that?
Dang.
It's pretty fucked up.
Wonder what he's doing now.
I don't know. I couldn't really find any information. I mean, in cases like that, they probably change their name and,
Yeah, I'm sure.
you
And I mean,
know.
I I would like to think that, again, his intention was not to burn the building down.
He did seem remorseful for it. They did say that.
That's good.
You know, I don't think that was his intention. I think, you know, they kind of thought he might have a lower IQ and that, you know, he didn't fully understand
the implications.
Yeah, what could happen, but he knew it was wrong, so.
Well, I hope he learned his lesson and is on the straight and narrow since.
All right, let's move on.
Cool.
We're going to talk about Raymond Lee Euler. Now, this was a fire in California. In Esperanza. It started October 26, 2006, and it wasn't fully contained until October 30th, so it burned for like 4 or 5 days.
Wow.
It was the worst wildfire since 1994, so you're talking about 12 years. This is crazy. It destroyed 40,200 acres, which is a lot.
That's a hell of a lot.
Destroyed 34 houses and 20 outbuildings, as well as damaging the highway.
Wow.
Like, it burned the highway.
How do you burn a highway?
I don't know, but it did damage the highway. They had to redo the roads.
Wow.
Caused over $9 million in damage.
Oof.
The fire spread at 40 miles per hour with temperatures between 1,300 and 1,500 degrees.
Ouch.
They said there were walls of flames, which, okay, like, I want to see it, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a wall of flame. They said it went from 70 to 100 feet. Like, you're talking... This was tall. Because this is also, like, in mountains and things like that.
Yeah.
The fire could actually be seen from NASA satellites. There's pictures where it shows you. You can see the
that's
fire.
That's crazy.
Well, I mean, 40,000 acres. Got to think that's
I know. I kind of... It's really sad, but I kind of want to see what that looks like from space.
Yeah, it's interesting. There is a picture. I can show it to you. The bad thing is, I mean, all of this is bad, but five firefighters were killed. When the wind shifted and blew the fire towards them, they didn't even have time to react. It happened so quickly.
Yeah.
So fire engine operator Jess McLean, who was 27, and assistant fire engine operator Jason McKay, who was 27 as well, they died right next to the fire engine and didn't even have time to get in it.
Wow.
Firefighter Daniel Hoover Najira, who was only 20, he died next to the house that they were trying to use this house, to kind of stave the fire off. They weren't trying to put it out, but, like, stop it.
Yeah, and redirect.
The house had an in-ground pool, and so they were trying to use the pool water as a backup as well.
Yeah.
So that's why they were at this particular spot. Captain Mark Lautzenheiser was 43. He survived it. He got transported to the hospital, but died, like, within hours. Hmm. And firefighter Pablo Cerda, who was 23, also made it out and was kept on life support for several days. And then his family made the decision to remove him. They said 90% of his body had been burned and his lungs and other organs were singed.
Oh my goodness. I can't imagine.
I can't imagine that either. And quite frankly, like, I understand wanting to keep your loved one on life support.
But not but with like those that. Injuries. Yeah. That would be horrible.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sure he was in a coma at that point and hopefully didn't feel anything.
I was going to say the amount of pain that he would be in if he wasn't. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I really hope he was not aware at all. Six different agencies put out a reward. They worked together and each of them put in $100,000, so there was a $600,000 reward. So hopefully they were going to find somebody. Euler actually got caught because his DNA was found on two cigarette butts that were used in nearby fires. He had set more than 20 fires in the area in the prior months.
Right.
So carelessness of smoking and leaving your cigarette butts there. During his trial, the defense admitted he set 11 fires, but they said he didn't set this big one.
No, of course not.
Right. It was just the other. They had him possibly linked to up to 50 fires.
Wow.
But it wasn't really, there wasn't enough evidence. Typically, though, his devices were a lit cigarette with matches on top, or matches wrapped around a cigarette and held together with a rubber band, with the idea being that it would give him enough time.
Yeah. To when the cigarette burns down, it'll eventually light the match, and by that point, he can get away.
Right.
Makes sense.
At the trial, his girlfriend testified that he bragged about setting fires and they weren't big enough. She threatened to leave him, so he quit setting fires, and this was conflicting. Some people said 6 weeks, some people said 6 months, but I don't know if it's like quitting smoking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, eventually.
Probably doesn't work.
Maybe he needs a pill for that. I don't know.
There's a support group somewhere.
There probably is, sadly.
Arson's Anonymous. Not to be confused with Alcohol Anonymous.
Can't we just call him Firesetter Anonymous?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He was found guilty of 5 counts of first-degree murder for the firefighters, 20 counts of arson, 17 counts of using an incendiary device. He was sentenced to death. A mandatory appeal was filed in 2016 with the death sentence. You have to have that appeal. Right. We talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't find any freaking info. Now, the last thing that I was able to find said that the appeal was like a 350-page document or something like that. And there were so many things in it, and that it kind of just stalled. Nothing's happened with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as I know, that's where it is.
Got it.
But, Raymond Lee Euler.
Just as a side note, mad props to all the fire departments and firemen out there. You guys do an amazing job trying to protect society, unless you're actually setting the fires yourself like that one guy. And you put your lives on the line, and, you know, I know it probably doesn't mean much, but it is appreciated by people, me, Sandy particularly.
Absolutely.
So thank you for your service, and thank you, you know, for doing such a selfless job.
All right, number 4. Now,
5.
Okay.
Take 2.
Okay, number 5.
Yep.
So, with number 5, it's a twofer. There are 2 people involved, but I'm still only counting it as one case because it was the same.
Right. Same thing. Incident.
So, these were Jason Bork and Daniel McAllister, and Bork just
makes me laugh. I'm sorry. It was like, so hard for me not to laugh right there, but then you said it again, and I had to laugh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Do
I know
you really want to be like Bork Bork? No. Who is that? Was that, like, on The Muppets or something?
No, was that, like, or maybe you were talking about, like, Chef?
Yes. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. But these two committed the 2010 East Texas church burnings. They were childhood friends. Their families actually attended churches together.
Hmm.
I believe they were Lutheran, but I'm not 100% sure. Jason was 19, Daniel was 21. Between January and February of 2010, 10 churches were burned. There was no specific religion targeted, and they couldn't really say, like, what the motivation was, but half of the churches were Baptists, just FYI. So I don't know if that's relevant or not.
Far be it for me, but I'm thinking the motivation might be religion-based. They just don't like, you know, religions. Just saying.
So officials set up a tip line, and they got a call from a woman who said her husband told her that his friend Daniel and Daniel's friend Jason were bragging about setting church fires. Jason was put under surveillance, but Daniel had actually, I think he went out of town to see his girlfriend, and so they weren't 100% sure where he was, so they didn't have him under surveillance yet.
Right.
They had no idea that they were even under investigation. On Valentine's Day that year, a customer reported unusual graffiti in the restroom at a hardware and farm supply store. It was an inverted cross with flames and the words, "Little Hope was arson." Little Hope was actually the first church that had been burnt down.
Mm-hmm.
And investigators at the time had listed it as undetermined. They didn't really know that it was arson, and it wasn't, like, put out to the public that it was arson. So this made them really think, like, you know, somebody knows. Really,
yeah. Because, like, when you're trying to hide and get away with crimes, you publicly write it on a home and garden store bathroom wall.
Look, when you want to brag about anything, bathroom stall walls are the way to go.
I guess.
Are you saying you've never written on stall walls?
No.
No, neither have I. I don't get it. I don't freaking get it at all.
I don't either. I don't.
Who doodles on the stall walls while you're in the bathroom?
I don't want to touch anything in there.
Yeah, I don't get it. I've never done it, but whatever. So, they went and they reviewed security footage at the supply store. And they saw Jason Bork, at the store the day before entering the restroom. So they kind of narrowed it down. I mean, he was already under surveillance. But, you know, he's under surveillance, but nobody thinks, like, let me go in the restroom and check after him. Because what would you think he did in the restroom? You know, there wasn't a fire, right. So. Once they got arrested, they did what friends do and turned on each other.
Like you do.
It was your fault. No, it was your fault.
You did it. You made me. That's what I'm going to do to you
when we get caught.
Totally.
Okay. As long as you're aware that I will totally drop a dime on you as fast as possible.
I don't even need money.
Right? I don't either. Like, shit, if somebody came to me today and was like, can you stab Carrie in the back? I'd be like, absolutely.
Sure.
Not a problem.
No, I'm not even gonna ask why.
All right, so they blamed their actions on drugs. Now, they had been smoking marijuana, which, I'm sorry, but that doesn't make me think that you're going to turn to arson.
No. I mean, I get hallucinogenic effects, but unless you're actively on drugs at the time,
well, and that's one what would they were saying. They were using so many drugs they couldn't make sound decisions. But they were also using painkillers. And then they were doing large amounts of drugs like Mucinex to the point that they would, like, pass out from it. I don't get it. I mean, what is it? Sudafed you can use for meth or whatever? I don't know if it has to do with that. But
so weird.
I thought it was like a component in it that
it
you
is.
Could use. Not the drug itself.
Yeah,
would get
it,
you.
I don't think you're going to take enough Sudafed that the Sudafedrin in there is going to, you know, make you high. No, I think it's...
I don't know. But that's... They were just popping them back, man. I don't get it.
Yeah. I worry about my congested nose a lot. So much so it causes me to set fires.
And in 2010, weren't they already, like, monitoring how much you were buying then? I think they still
did
that.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Bork. I just can't.
Bork,
I can't.
Bork, 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 Bork.
He also blamed it on Chantix, the quit smoking drug. He said that, you know, it really messed with him and gave him, like, hallucinations. And
I have heard that from other people that
I've heard
I know.
It too, but I can tell you that I've taken Chantix and I did not have that.
But the
but
other
people did.
The other people I know that had hallucinations, hallucinations. Sorry, didn't go and start fires.
No.
So just saying.
No, no. A lot of it, I think, with Chantix, wasn't it like more with weird dreams, like realistic dreams and stuff. At the time, they were also both questioning their faith. Jason, because he was just questioning his faith. But McAllister, his mother had actually died recently, and he was really struggling with that. And I think it was the whole why, God, why kind of question.
Again, and I completely understand that, but people go through that all the time and don't set fire to churches.
True. And I just realized that I didn't put this in here, and I don't know why I didn't, but I did not know, and something I learned while I was researching this, was that if you set a place of worship, like if you destroy a place of worship, it's actually a felony, which I didn't know that that was a thing. So because they had been setting churches on fire, they actually got charged a little bit heavier.
I wonder why a church is considered a felony.
I wish I wrote it down, because I honestly don't remember.
That's super weird.
It has to do with it being a place of worship and, I guess, sacred. But then don't even get me started, because then I'll get into the whole church versus state.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that argument is enough for me.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah.
So Bork was...
Bork, Bork,
sentenced,
Bork.
He was sentenced to life plus 20 years, and McAllister was sentenced to life, and they both waived their rights to appeal, so they'll be in jail for a while.
Wow. Craziness.
Number six.
Yes.
We're going to talk about a guy named Harry Burkhart.
Okay.
Now, there's a little bit of detail I have to get into to understand the background of this and potentially the motives. He was actually from Germany, and he was wanted there on suspicion of burning down his home. His mother, Dorothy Burkhart, she was also wanted in Germany, so I guess it's a family affair. I don't know.
Hmm. The family who burns together stays together.
Well, she didn't burn stuff. I will give you that. She didn't have an arson issue. She had been detained when she was there for multiple charges, which I will get into. And she started saying, like, her heart was having problems and she needed to see a doctor. So they got her an appointment at a cardiology clinic. And they let her wear civilian clothes because, you know, you don't want to show up to your cardiology appointment in handcuffs and whatever they're called.
Yeah.
I can't think of what it's called.
No, God forbid you'd be safe.
Yeah, right. She asked if she could use the restroom, so they took the handcuffs off. They actually were on. They took the handcuffs off so she could use the restroom. And so what did she do?
Went out the window.
You freaking got it. She
wow.
pieced right out of that bitch. And she called her son and she was like, get
Pick
the money,
up.
Get the documents, we're running.
So we out.
They fled. They went through, like, I don't remember, I'm not even gonna lie to you, like Amsterdam or some crap. And they went ultimately to Canada. They tried to file claims for refugee protection, but they got denied both in 2009 and again in 2010. Harry had a visa for the U.S., but Dorothy didn't, but she came anyway. So,
like you do.
So here's what she was charged with in Germany. She had 19 counts of fraud committed on a commercial basis and as a member of a gang. I have a lot of questions, but I couldn't find a lot of info.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious what kind of gang she was in.
Yeah, I know. Like, sorry, I'm trying to...
Was it the grandma gang?
I'm trying to imagine my grandma in a gang. She can't even walk 2 feet, let alone join a gang.
Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing. But I found that quite interesting. That and that's why I put it in there as a member of a gang.
So funny.
And I don't know what Germany's laws are at all. So I don't know if they, you know, certain things mean something different for them. Not that gangs would, but like,
yeah, but is that like, things gangs. Well, is that like four grandmas and a knitting group are now a gang?
I mean, technically, maybe a gang is four or more people gathered in a,
true,
you know,
could be
having meetings.
Yeah.
At least we're only two. Then we can't be a gang.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Part of her charges included failure to pay for 2004 breast augmentation and pilfering, or stealing, since you don't like my big words.
Yeah.
$45,000 worth of security deposits from renters, which I also had a question about, like, were they her renters? Did she work at a place that rent, like, but finding information on her was much more difficult.
So, Grandma defaulted on her brew job?
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
She didn't pay for them suckers.
Wow.
Yeah.
They should take them back.
Can you repossess breast
augmentation? Have you seen that movie, Repo the Genetic Opera?
I have.
Yeah,
it's
totally. I love it.
It is. It's special.
It is.
That's the best way to put that. So on December 29th of 2011, she had an extradition hearing to send her back. And if anyone doesn't know what extradition is, it's to send you back to the country that you came from and where you're facing charges typically. Mm-hmm. She was potentially going to be deported back to Germany, and Harry was in court for this, and he was like, fuck the United States. And, you know,
we don't like it when you say stuff like this.
Well, it doesn't make things look suspicious for you either, like,
no.
That you're all angry. Like, if you would have walked out, like, calm, maybe nobody would have suspected you. But later that day, 21 fires were set in Los Angeles within a few hours.
That just seems a little odd.
And that was on the 29th. And then on the 30th to the 31st, even more fires were set in the Los Angeles metro area. January 4th, he got arrested and he was charged with 28 counts of felony arson of property. I don't know what this means because I wrote 0 counts of arson of an inhabited structure. So it's either 10 or a 9. Not sure which. I think it's 9 counts of arson. January 23rd, 2012, they slammed him with an additional 63 charges of arson.
Dang.
But ultimately, it had to go to the grand jury who determines, like, what your charges are really going to be. And he got charged with 49 counts of arson, arson of inhabited buildings, and possession of flammable materials. The total damage was estimated at $2 million.
Are we not allowed to have flammable materials? Because if not, I gotta get rid of some stuff.
Yeah, you and me both. Does the fire pit count as flammable materials?
The pit itself, no. The stuff in the pit,
the
probably.
Wood.
Yeah.
The wood. Yeah. I have gas at my house, too, for the lawnmower and shit.
Yeah, so. That definitely. Mm-mm. Mm. You're going to jail.
So his trial started in 2016. He pled not guilty and not guilty by reason of insanity, which is very awesome. Fun fact, if you did not know, not guilty by reason of insanity is a very hard to get decision. In the U.S. Some people will try for it, but it's actually not as common as you might think.
Interesting.
They try for it, but they don't get it. It's one that, because you really have to prove that you really didn't know the difference.
Yeah.
And it
gets
very
difficult.
And most
people know the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah. He was found guilty in 2016 of all 49 counts, but when they got to the sentencing phase, and they were trying to decide on the insanity plea, the jury deadlocked. So a mistrial was called. 8 of the 12 people thought he was insane. So they had to have a new sentencing phase. So that was in March 2018, and a new jury decided that he was sane. So he was sentenced to 33 years and 4 months in prison.
Wow. Wonder where Grandma was at this time.
Back in Germany.
Ooh.
They got rid of that bitch.
Like she should. Out. We don't want your criminals. That's what Australia's for.
I did read one.
Sorry, that's Australia. Terrible. It's history.
I did read one thing that said she had tried to use her son's crimes as a way to stay in the U.S.
as a way of her staying in the country. Like, I can understand. Like she has to be there to support him because he's got nobody. He's German in the U.S.
Yeah, some kind of crap like that. She tried to play the cards. So that was Harry Burkhart.
Interesting.
All right, so next we're going to talk about Thomas Sweat.
Sweat?
Sweat with two T's, though.
Oh, Sweat.
Sweat. Cool. I like that.
Yeah,
it's like... All right. I can't deal with you some days. There were over 350 fires in the D.C. area that were set over the span of 20 years. This started in 1985.
Wow.
At the time, Sweat was a fry cook. Later, he was a fast food manager. He was linked to all these fires through DNA. DNA is so awesome.
It's very cool.
Here's what's weird, okay? And motives are... Sometimes you can't understand the motives. Sometimes Correct. You can. You can be like, oh, okay, I can see why that might be.
Right.
In this case, I don't understand his motive. If he saw a man he thought was handsome, because he was gay, if he saw a man he thought was handsome, he would follow him home and then set fire to his house or his car. My questions are why? Because now I have some theories, right? Like, one is to get their attention. Like, you know, maybe there's a way you could help them and meet them. Or maybe you're going to save them.
Oh, I was thinking the complete opposite. He feels guilty for his own feelings of gayness. So he's basically taking it out on attractive people. So when they bring up the feelings in him that he's attracted to a man, he takes it out on them and tries to extinguish the reason why he feels that
way. Why would it be all psychological and shit? I mean, you may not be wrong, especially because this was like it started in the 80s. And back then it was...
Exactly.
Still pretty frowned upon.
There were still places you could send people to turn straight.
Ugh, God, straight camps. Give me a break.
Exactly.
But, I didn't really think about it, and it didn't really say, why. It just said that was kind of his M.O. Which, M.O. Modus operandi. And it is what causes you, or what your methods are to do something.
Yep.
And a lot of times you follow a pattern. Like, if you... follow a handsome man, or maybe you like to go at night into the grocery store and play with the ham. I don't freaking know.
Sandy, you shouldn't be telling people all your secrets.
Sorry, I like ham. Okay, anyway.
Don't buy the ham.
No, especially not late at night. I'm not saying like I like everything, but I might. So
it's good when it's slimy.
Gross. Gross. Okay. He would also toss incendiary devices into police cars and watch them burn. So I guess that's just fun.
Well, I mean, if it's specific to police, I would think that he's targeting like authority.
Yeah.
Kind of like, fuck the authority. Yeah. I'm burning your car.
I guess. So one of the things that he would do and how he would get away with this and set fires, he would take a milk jug and fill it with gasoline, and then he would put the plug the opening of it with a piece of cloth, so almost like a Molotov cocktail, but on a bigger level.
Right.
The cloth would burn for about 20 minutes before it got into the container and melted it, and once that happened, gas fumes would escape and catch fire. And then it would spread. So this gave him plenty of time to get away from the vicinity. I mean, 20 minutes, you can make it. I don't know if he was driving or walking.
Right.
But you could still make it.
Pretty far.
Pretty far in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his MO. In 2003, there were numerous fires in D.C. and in Prince George's County, which is in Maryland, including a fire near Marine Barracks. Now, Sweat was obsessed with Marines.
Sweat-ta-ta.
I'm sorry. He had been rejected by the U.S. Navy in the 70s, and Marine Corps security cameras identified his vehicle at the scene of the car fire that was near the barracks. So
this is going to sound kind of funny, but I totally mean this seriously. So did he try to join? It was Marines, right? Did he try to join because he liked the uniform and he was trying to get, like, in with the Marine dudes? You know that old adage, they have a, you know... person in every port.
I don't have that for a fact, but I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
I believe he, at some point I read that he did like men in uniform.
Who doesn't?
Well, it depends if they're coming after me or not. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, true. And I guess the bell-bottom dudes on boats, I'm not too in, not too
the
into
bell
that.
bottom dudes
Yeah, the
on
white
boats.
uniforms dudes, I don't know if they're Marines or whatever, but they wear white uniforms and they basically like have bell
I didn't
bottoms.
know they had bell bottoms. I thought they were
Totally.
just like regular slacks. I know exactly what you're talking
No.
about.
No, I'm pretty sure they were like actually bell bottoms. I don't know if they still are.
I doubt it.
I would hope not. I would hope fashion would end up in the military at some
But
point.
everything old becomes new again.
It's true. So maybe they've come back. I don't know. But that's one uniform. I don't want to see my man in bigger pants than me.
What if he has a bigger butt than you?
Butt's fine, but your the leg of your pants doesn't need to be, you know, bigger than the leg of my pants. Just saying. Anyway,
All right,
totally.
anyway, so in August of 2005, there were two fatal arson cases in DC that were closed when Sweat was arrested. He was 50 at the time. The fires were February 5th, 2002, at 4:05 a.m. There was a house fire. 93-year-old Annie Brown was transported to the hospital in serious condition, and she died about a week later from smoke inhalation. And then June 5th, 2003, at 4:30 a.m., which seemed to be a popular time, I guess, 85-year-old Lou Edna Jones was found after a fire was extinguished. They found her in the remains.
Aww.
So, very sad. Now, it gets sadder though, because I love sad things. In 1985, Thomas had passed an attractive man on the street and followed him home to see where he lived. Then he went back to his own house and he got fire-related items, things he needed to set the fire. He went back to the house, poured a 2-liter bottle of gasoline under the front door, and lit it.
Wow.
On the second floor was Ray Picotte, his wife Bessie Mae Duncan, his daughter, and a stepdaughter.
Aww.
In the basement were his son and his stepson. Bessie Mae died in the fire. She didn't make it out. She died from asphyxia and smoke inhalation. Picotte was severely injured. He escaped out the window, but he had smoke inhalation and first, second, and third degree burns over 60% of his body.
Wow.
So he didn't quite last long. He died 2 months later,
That's a lot of burn.
mostly from infections and pneumonia, which actually happens a lot when you get
Yeah.
burned. I don't know why pneumonia happens when you get burned, but it does, and I don't know why. It took 85 firefighters 45 minutes to put out the fire.
Wow.
The daughter and the stepdaughter were severely burned, but the boys were unharmed because they were downstairs.
Yeah.
Fire goes out.
Smoke rises, yeah.
Yeah. The fire was originally blamed on a carelessly discarded cigarette until Sweat confessed.
Sweat-a-ta. Wow, he confessed to it?
Yeah, once they arrested him for the other fires,
Got it.
he was like, oh yeah, there was this fire in 1985. Like, at the time, no one thought it was
Suspected
arson.
him, yeah.
And it kind of sucks that, like, think about the children. Like, they thought that their parents set the house on fire by accident. Like, to find
That's
out
crazy.
later
Yeah.
that someone did this intentionally is
Right, and
doesn't make it better in
but
any
oddly
way.
enough, there was more fire prevention methods. Like back then, like foam and stuff had fire retardants in it, so it would be less likely to burn. Now, foam and stuff doesn't have fire retardants in it. There's not a chemical fire retardant in it. There's a sock that they put over it to prevent it from continuing to burn, but there was more chemical prevention back then. So I'm surprised that they would have thought that just a cigarette would have burned that
You
much.
would be surprised that actually in a lot of the fires I was looking at, especially the ones that took place like in the 70s or 80s, that's what they blamed them on. Going backwards, your foam thing, doesn't that seem retarded?
Yeah,
Not
so
retardant. Doesn't that seem retarded?
it
I did it again. I shouldn't say that word. I'm sorry.
yes, it seems counterintuitive. So the reason why they started doing that, and actually it's funny because California actually developed a test because of cigarettes. So there is a smolder test, California TB 117, Technical Bulletin 117, that was actually developed because of cigarettes, because of fires created by cigarettes. So foam was required to pass the cigarette burn test, where you basically set a lit cigarette on a simulated couch, small representation of a simulated couch made of foam for the seat and back. It burns the entire way, and then you basically measure how much of the foam burned. It was also, so the way the test works is it's covered with a certain fabric to represent like the fabric on a couch or a bed, and then the cigarette is actually covered with a cloth as well, So kind of like if you were laying in if you were laying under your bed in a sheet and you were smoking a cigarette at the same time. Don't suggest you do either one of these things, but there is a test required that you're required to pass in order to pass this test. So what they were finding is the chemical fire retardant was leaching from the foam, and they were finding it in like fish and brain and stuff like
That's
that.
not
So
good.
yeah. So although yes, it does kind of make it more hazardous as far as just having piles of foam laying around, they found other ways to do the fire prevention, which is like a fire sock. So if you ever take the cover off your mattress, there's this sock over top of your mattress. That's a fire sock. Don't ever break that. And that's what actually prevents your foam from continuing to burn. Just having a bunch of foam in your house, probably don't want to put that against a bunch of other stuff that burns because it will burn. But that's why they changed the law, actually. So there's no more chemical fire retardant. But at the time, back in the 80s, that was still a thing.
Interesting. And now you find out that Carrie knows a lot about foam.
I do.
Well, no, that is actually really interesting, and I did not know that because
Yep.
I would think exactly what you said. I mean, now you would think you would use more ways to combat that,
Right. They just found different ways to do it.
but are they still effective?
They are effective when used properly, but like I said, if you break the sock and it doesn't work.
So if I cut a hole in my bed, I probably messed up.
Probably.
Okay.
Just
Note to self,
FYI.
don't carve a hole in the bed and then light it on fire. Light it on fire
Yeah,
first.
exactly.
Got it. Cool. All right. So Swetata
Switch it.
pled guilty in September 2005 for possession of destructive devices. Now, here's a question. What is considered a destructive device? I mean, could we
Exactly.
all be charged with that,
Right?
honestly? I have kitchen knives.
Exactly. There's an axe, there's staplers, scissors, all destructive devices.
This is
A
true. This is
hammer.
true. Yeah, a lighter, I
Yep,
mean.
just saying.
Destruction of buildings by fire resulting in personal injury. Possession of destructive devices in furtherance of a crime of violence. First degree premeditated murder and second degree murder. Now, his sentence was very special. He was sentenced multiple different things. He was sentenced to 262 months in jail, which would then be followed by a 30-year sentence. And then a 6-year sentence, and then 288 months, and then a life sentence. So I'm pretty sure he's never making it out.
No, I'm pretty sure he's not making it past the first sentence.
Yeah, so when they do things consecutively,
Yeah.
I had a moment there, consecutively like that, you have no shot.
Yeah,
Because even if
none.
you were eligible for parole, your next sentence would
Sentence would,
start.
yeah, exactly.
So,
That's kind of insane. But yeah, to your earlier point, like this dude got like over 200 years in prison for fire, and there are murderers walking around on the street.
yeah.
That makes no sense
Although
to
he did
me.
kill a couple people,
He did,
so.
but again, that I don't know whether that was the primary motive
I don't think it was
or
in
just
this
like
case.
a secondary oops.
Yeah, I do think part of it was he wanted to try to save these people, but I also think he was like too scared to. I think he was, in a way, like nervous to meet the man or the men that he found attractive.
I'm gonna still go with the I think he was trying to blame them for his own his attractiveness to these people, and he was basically trying to quell that attractiveness.
All right, on to number eight. Now, this one made me giggle, and you'll see why.
More than Bork.
Yes, and you're gonna freaking love it.
Okay.
All right, so this is John Leonard Orr. He was also nicknamed the Pillow Pyro, and I'll tell you why in a little bit.
Does he set fire to pillows?
Fabric sores
Yeah,
mostly, but
okay.
yeah. There was also a nickname for him that was listed that is my new favorite thing, and but I couldn't find any I like information on why. But they had his nickname listed as Frito Bandito, which is like, I really hope it's real because
Yeah,
it's the best
that is
thing ever.
awesome.
I love
Great
it.
name.
The Frito
Maybe he ate
Bandito.
Fritos while setting fire.
Yeah, I don't know. Like maybe he set fire to convenience stores. Like I don't freaking
Maybe
know,
he used the
but
Fritos to set the fires. Like you can burn
are Fritos?
Doritos.
Yeah, I guess you could.
You can burn Doritos. I wonder if you can burn Fritos.
I don't know.
Wow.
But I couldn't find any information on that. And so it's possible that it wasn't legit. I will just say that now.
I don't
But it
care.
made me
It's
giggle. It
fantastic.
is.
I have to see if Fritos are flammable now.
They probably are.
Oh, by the way, just a little side note, little piece of information. Dairy, the powdered creamer, very flammable. Don't
Is
light it
it?
on fire. Yes.
How did you find this out?
You know. Actually, I have to take like a I take hazmat classes and stuff like that and fire for, you know,
I would not have thought
response
that at
classes.
all.
Me neither, but it actually really is. It's kind of disturbing because you ingest that into your body.
Yeah, well, we ingest Coke in our body, a Coca-Cola, PS,
That's
and you
true.
can use that to clean toilets, so
And
just,
rust.
oh my God, I'm just saying. It's so disturbing.
True.
But I have a lot of powdered creamer at my house right now,
Yeah.
so I might have to do a science experiment later.
Yeah, just make sure you're not outside around the dog or in the grass, unless the grass is wet.
So do it in the house on wood.
What?
That's what I got.
Yes.
I got a plan now. All right. So John Leonard Orr, back to him, Pillow Pyro. He was a fire captain and an arson investigator for the Glendale Fire Department in California. He was invited to test for the LA Fire Department, but he failed the mental health test.
Okay. Note to self. Isn't that a clue? Just saying.
Maybe.
Go ahead.
All right, so and I just said that wrong. It was the LAPD, but he failed the mental health test. So
Either
then he
way.
went to the LA Fire Department. He went through the fire academy, but when it got to the written and physical test, he really had a problem with that, so he got rejected. Then he applied to the Glendale Fire Department, where he wound up. It was the lowest paid fire department in LA County, so nobody really wanted to be there.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
they
you
were
don't get
probably
paid that
like,
much.
right, they were probably really desperate for people, so they took him.
But I'm really surprised there isn't any communication, like of, hey, by the way, this guy failed our mental exam.
Well, this was in the 80s,
A good point, never mind.
so, which I didn't tell you yet, but it was in the 80s, so back then
Yep.
communication was awful. It still is,
No
but
internet.
the interwebs. He was a very respected investigator, actually, and they were having these issues with fires, and he would often go on the news and like do
Wow.
the
Like the
what are they called? Yeah,
interviews.
the interviews. He would write articles for magazines about fire safety, that kind of stuff. So he was actually pretty good. The MO, he would use incendiary devices, and this is so similar to another one. He would leave them inside stores during the daytime when they were actually really populated, so he wasn't worried about people being safe, I don't think. But he typically used a lit cigarette that ignited three matches wrapped in yellow lined paper, like a legal paper, secured by a rubber band, which is so similar to the other guy
It really
that used
is.
the matches and cigarettes. Like, I didn't know.
I didn't
I
know that
mean,
was a thing.
yeah, like I didn't know that was like a common knowledge type thing,
Me
I guess.
neither, because I've never heard. I mean, it makes sense now that you say it, but it
Yeah.
wouldn't have occurred to me on my own.
No. I'd have been like, will the match set fire to the plastic? Because that's how that goes. But
Yeah.
no. Yeah, so
Odd.
I thought it was interesting when I saw both of those cases use that, and I'm guessing there are others that use the same thing, and just interesting.
But for that guy, I'm not all that surprised because I'm sure he's seen a lot of stuff when it comes to fire. So maybe he just picked up from what he has seen other people do.
And right at the moment, I can't remember if that other guy was from California, but that makes you question that too, because
Exactly.
he's from California too. Okay, so going back to why he was the pillow pyro, you already said, you know, he would set fires typically in fabric stores, sometimes around the pillowcases, because they would set fire so quickly, and it would spread much faster.
Right.
So that was where he got that nickname. In 1984, at Ohl's Home Center, it could be Ole, I'm not sure, but I'm
I'm
gonna
gonna
go with
say
Ohl's.
Ole's.
In South Pasadena, California, a fire got set. The building burned down completely.
Wow.
It was pretty bad, the fire, and it spread pretty quickly. Four people were killed in the fire. Ada Deal, she was 50. Her grandson Matthew Troidle, who was only two. Caroline Krause, who was 26. And an employee, Jimmy Satina, who was 17.
Aww.
Multiple fire investigators were on the scene, and they all agreed that this looked like an electrical fire. But Orr insisted it was deliberately set. He kept saying, no, it's arson, but no one thought that.
So They're trying to play it off like it's just something that happened. He's the one that insisted it was arson.
Yes, but no one listened to him, so it got deemed as an electrical fire and left at that. In January of 1987, there was a convention for arson investigators in Fresno, and during that time, like while the convention was happening, there was an unusually large number of fires set in nearby locations. Now, they didn't figure out what happened. They just kind of, a lot of fires wind up attributed to stupid things like
Yeah.
cigarettes or whatever. You know, I don't think that in a lot of cases they directly go to arson unless there's obvious signs. So didn't figure those out. 2 years later, in March of 1989, another convention was held in Pacific Grove, and again, an unusually large number of fires were set in the area. So Captain Marvin Casey of the Bakersfield Fire Department, he'd been at both conventions, and he was suspicious. He was thought it was somebody that was at the convention. It was probably a firefighter or arson investigator, because unfortunately, you see that a lot. A lot of times, like I think we've seen another one, another two, where firefighters are the ones doing it. And you see that sometimes where they just wanna, it's like the Munchausen syndrome thing where they wanna save people.
But it seems like he's trying very hard for attention-seeking behavior since he's doing it around these conventions.
Or he's just seeing how far he can push it. You
Maybe.
know, maybe it's like all these people can't find me. It's hard to say, but partial prints had been located on some of the devices, and he compared it to the attendees from 1987 and 1989. He wanted to see who had been at both conventions. He narrowed that list down to 10 people, and Orr was on there. But his fingerprint did not match. So they moved on, they couldn't figure it out. In 1991, Tom Campisano of the LA Arson Task Force, they actually had a pillow pyro task force, heard about Casey's investigation, and he met with him. And Casey gave him the partial print with the newer technology. They were able to actually link it to Orr. And that's kind of amazing to me too, because you're talking about in like 2 years, there's such a vast difference. The ATF got involved. They put a GPS tracker on Orr's car, and he found it and removed it. So they put a second one on just a little bit later, and I guess he figured since the one didn't work, they wouldn't put a second one because he didn't find the second one. So yeah, he was arrested in December of 1991. They went through his house, and they found this very damning piece of evidence, just too coincidental. There was a 350-page manuscript that he had written, and it was called Point of Origin: Playing with Fire. It was about an arsonist who also worked as an arson investigator.
A little too close to
Coincidence?
home.
But there were a lot of other circumstances that were very similar too. The same type of device was talked about in the book, I mean, almost exactly. There was a fire in a department store where four people died, including a woman and her 2-year-old grandson. Convenient. But it gets worse too from there because in the book he talks about the woman and the grandson were going to go and get mint ice cream after they left the store. Well, no one knew this. It was actually true in that case. The grandfather said that that's what they were going to do. So he had to have been nearby to have known that.
Exactly.
That doesn't look good.
No,
Like, you
it
should have at least
doesn't.
made it like we're going to go get a burger instead of actually what they were doing.
Exactly. Again, it seems like some of these mistakes only seem almost too stupid to be mistakes.
I was listening to something the other day, and it was like, after they arrested the people, they found a piece of paper, and it was called The Plan. I was like, you just did that to
I was
yourself,
gonna say,
though.
you might as well have just said, I set all these fires and then listed the fires.
Would
Just
you be
saying.
surprised to know that that has happened? Like, not necessarily with fires, but like,
Would I be surprised to know? No, I wouldn't. These people are dumb.
I mean, they've made full lists of how they're gonna go about stuff and got caught. Oh my God, it's too much. Okay, another day. So he got found guilty of murder for the fire in Olds, and for 20 other crimes, including a fire in the College Hills section of Glendale, which destroyed 67 residential homes. Now I believe, and I'm not 100% sure on this, that these were homes that were being built. So no one was living in them.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but 67 is a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
At his federal trial, because he had a federal trial as well as a state trial. At his federal trial, he was convicted of 3 counts of arson out of the 5 that he was charged with, and he was sentenced to 3 consecutive 10-year terms. He made a plea bargain and pled guilty to a 1990 fire at Builders Emporium in North Hollywood and two other fires near Atascadero in 1989. They required him to pay $90,000 in restitution, but as part of this plea deal, he would be eligible for parole in 2002. But I say that. And then California State put him on trial. And he was charged with four counts of first-degree murder. He was found guilty, but the jury deadlocked on the sentencing phase because he was eligible for the death penalty. And in California, and in most states, I think, you have to have a unanimous decision there.
Yeah.
8 out of 12 jurors thought he should get the death penalty, but they deadlocked. So, there was a new sentencing hearing, and he was given life plus 20 years that would be served after his federal sentence. So, he's in jail. I don't think he's getting out.
Nope. That's, I don't understand how you can dedicate your life to trying to prevent and protect people and be the one that's doing it. Like, that makes no sense to me.
Well, think about it, like, with doctors or nurses who kill too. I mean, it's the same thing. Here you are, you're supposed to save people. And yeah.
I just don't understand it. But it doesn't make sense. Let's be honest.
Do you understand most of these murders?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, I can understand to a certain degree, like, in some cases, why their brains go there, okay? But I cannot understand acting out and doing it. I really can't.
Yeah, me either.
Especially, like, when someone gets killed. Like, I don't think so much of myself that I have the right to determine when a person's life should end.
Agreed. And that's a really good way to put it, too, because, honestly, who the hell are you?
Exactly.
I mean, and I don't think most people think about it that way, but it makes sense.
But, you know, that's how I think about it. I'm like, who am I to determine that this should happen to you? Nobody.
It's true.
You know, and I'm a firm believer of karma. That it's going to come back at some point. I would like to believe that at some point the damage that you do will come back to you.
In a lot of ways, I hope that's true too, because there are just so many people who
agree
deserve it.
Yeah, true.
Number
nine.
We're getting to the end of the line.
Yep.
All right, we're going to talk about Julio Gonzalez. Hmm. This is a fire that took place in the Happy Land Social Club, which is just, it sounds like a bad, like, kids TV show or something.
It does.
But the Happy Land Social Club. So, in 1989, the owner of the club got an order to close the club. And the reason was it had no liquor license, there were multiple building code infractions, and it was deemed a fire hazard. But he didn't close it.
Of course not.
The firefighters had been surveilling the location. They knew that it was open. But this became a case of not my job.
Oh, I love that one.
So the firefighters thought, you know, it was up to the police to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I kind of understand. Like, firefighters don't really have the jurisdiction, I don't think. Well, no, but if it's a fire hazard, then they would, right?
I don't know. I think police might still have to enforce, but they should be the ones to go to the police and say, hey, this is a problem. You need to X, Y, and Z. Because the fire department, I would think, would have the information to support what the police would then be doing.
I mean, that makes sense. And the police were, like, they were kind of checking out the building, but for some reason that I will never understand, they only went during the off hours. Like, you would think if it's a nightclub, you would go at night. And this one was, like, open, like, late into the morning, so you would think, or early, I don't know how you want to look at that.
Police were tired.
Maybe. Yeah. The donut shops were opening. But, true. You know.
Like.
So, it stayed open for at least a year, another year.
Wow.
March 25th, 1990, Gonzalez, who was 37, got to the club between midnight and 1 a.m. And when he was there, he got into a fight with his ex-girlfriend who worked there in the coat check room. He didn't want her to work there. Now, I don't fully know why. I don't know if it was because it was an underground club, if he was just the jealous type. Like, who the hell knows?
Right.
He had been fighting with her about working there. The bouncer overheard this, told him, get the hell out. And he told both the bouncer and his ex that he'd be back and she wouldn't work there no more. So, not a good sign.
No.
But that's knowing what we know.
Yes.
At the time,
Yeah.
You know,
threats
and
are threats.
you're talking about in the like in 1990, okay? Like the gun issue wasn't as big of an issue.
Right.
You know, people weren't just coming back shooting you because you said hi.
Right.
Or looked at them funny. So at 3:30 a.m. he returned, and he had a dollar's worth of gasoline. That was it. But apparently that's enough, because he poured it into the only entry into the club, which is part of why it was a fire hazard.
Makes sense.
And lit a match.
Wow.
He left, but then he came back just to watch. Which is fucked up.
Yeah.
87 people died from smoke inhalation.
Wow.
Some people suffocated so quickly, they were still holding their drinks.
Dang.
Yeah, so that's gotta tell you, like, this happened quick.
I mean, it did.
They were in a windowless room. You know, one entry, they just had no chance. Six people did manage to escape, one of which was his ex-girlfriend.
That's kind of funny.
It's kind of fucked up, really. I mean,
it's funny in an ironic way, because, like, if I had said, hey, I'm going to come back, and you're not going to work here anymore, I probably would have made sure she survived prior to, like, maybe I wouldn't have done it when the place was occupied. I would have done it in the off hours, because it's not like she can go to work if the place is burned down. Why do it with people there?
Or maybe he was trying to kill her.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe I mean, that's my thought, is he was so angry that he was whatever.
He missed the mark on that one.
Yeah, and here's my problem, too, and this goes back to the same thing that I think we're just going to say this every time we have an episode. Why? You killed a whole bunch of innocent people.
Exactly, for no reason.
And you wanted, even if that was your point, was to get back at her or to burn the club down, like you said, there were definitely better alternatives. Instead, you killed 87 people who had nothing to do with whatever.
I can't imagine that these people are thinking at all about what they're doing.
Do you think it's like blind rage, or do you think it's like stupidity?
I mean, I think it's probably a combination of both.
Fair. That's fair. So, in August of 1991, he was convicted of 176 counts of murder. He got two counts for each death, which I thought was really right. Murder by depraved indifference to human life, felony murder, first-degree arson, first-degree assault. And that was because the DJ had suffered some serious fire injuries, so he survived, but it was still considered assault.
Yeah.
He got sentenced to 25 years to life. Now, this makes me mad. You got charged with 176 counts of murder.
And you only got 25
This
years.
Is where I say you're going to get mad. Because the deaths were all the result of the same act, he only got the one charge.
What?
Now, explain that to me, because let's just talk for a minute about maybe a sensitive topic, school shootings. I don't think they do that with school shootings. Like, okay, you killed them all in the same spot, but I still think you get charged for each
per count. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that was, like, a law then that was a thing, but I thought...
That makes no sense.
I didn't know that
was
a thing.
But, like, the families of those people, you took 87 people away from their families and friends, and you got charged as if it was only one.
Yep.
No. I'm sorry. You basically, to me, that seems like an invalidation of life.
It really does. Like, it feels like you just said 86 of those people don't matter.
Exactly.
And if I were those families, I would be livid.
I would be too.
Now, the only thing that I'm going to say is he was eligible for parole in 2015, but he was denied.
Good.
And he would have been eligible again in November 2016, but he died in September that year at 61. Oh. So at least he didn't get out.
Yeah.
But again, that's not justice.
No. No, it's really not.
And I really do wonder, like I said, is that a law in that state? Was it a law at the time? Because I didn't think that was a thing.
Yeah,
I thought,
that seems ridiculous.
The Oklahoma City bombing, like, are you going to say that that was all
one
counts as one?
No. You can't.
There's no way. It's not right.
No.
I mean, in no logical way can you narrow that down to say it's the same as killing one person.
Nope. Not at all.
So, that one made me a little mad.
Yeah.
We are on to number 10, and number 10 is a little long.
Cool.
So, I'm just going to warn you.
Good.
And it's got a lot of info. So, but I thought all of the info was worthwhile, because I feel like you need to understand some of what was happening.
Right.
So this is about Peter Dinsdale. Now, Peter was also considered a serial killer, so I'm just going to tell you that now. But the primary way people died was through arson.
Okay.
So I still feel like he was an arsonist.
Mm-hmm.
He changed his name later, just so you know. to Bruce Lee, like after the martial artist.
That's messed up.
Yeah, poor Bruce Lee, because, you know, I wouldn't want him to share my name.
No,
But
no.
he did change his name to Bruce Lee, and then I guess after people knew that that's who he was, he changed it again and went by Peter Tregidge. So just FYI, he's gone by a couple different names.
That's so weird.
December 4th, 1979, there was a fire at the Hastie house. Edith Hastie and her three sons were awoken by the smell and sound of fire. Someone had poured paraffin through the letterbox and set it alight. Paraffin being like wax.
Wax, yeah.
Now, and you know, this was like 70s, 80s. I don't know if like paraffin was
Yeah, because like wax
more.
melts, but I've never known it to catch fire.
And this was in the UK. P.S. This was in the UK also. So
Okay,
I don't
okay.
know if there was some
Maybe
kind
there was
of,
some difference.
yeah, something in it that would, because that's what I thought. I was like, candles don't, that's not gonna work. So her 15-year-old son with the fire, he was trying to figure out how he could save everybody. So he pushed his mom out the window, which was, you know, he was worried she'd get hurt, but it would be better than being in the fire. And then he went to save his two younger brothers, but all three of them died, unfortunately. The Hasties were considered a problem family for rowdy, antisocial behavior. So there were a number of people that had grudges potentially with the family, and the police weren't sure. No, I'm not saying they ignored it. They just thought there's a lot of suspects, you know? So they interviewed a whole bunch of people in the area, and younger, like teenagers. And they got to Peter, and he just admitted he set the fire. Like, just came right out with it.
How odd.
It is a bit odd. He claimed that he and Charles Hastie, who was the 15-year-old, had been sexually involved, and that Charlie was trying to blackmail him, and that's why he did it.
Oh.
Now, Charlie's dead, so
Yeah, no way to verify.
yeah, so who knows?
So, what potential motive?
So that's kind of what got him caught. But let's talk about the things that happened before that. He had a very difficult childhood. He was raised by his grandparents. His parents, I think his mom had some drug issues. His dad was in jail, that kind of a thing, couldn't handle him. He had a low IQ, and he had a deformed arm and leg, which is important for a couple of reasons. One being he was bullied, and another being later on, they try to say that he couldn't have set the fires because of it.
Got it.
He was picked on a lot,
I'm sure.
and they called him Daft Peter, which,
Aww.
see, I found it funny, but it is kind of sad. I just like the word daft,
I do
though.
too,
You
but we
know.
think of it in the US as just kind of like a funny term, where in the UK it's much more derogatory, I
Oh,
think.
yeah, it is, for sure. So while he was confessing to the Hastie fire, he was like, hey, while I'm here, let me tell you about all the other fires I set.
Because that's what you do. You just admit everything.
He was 19 at this time, and he told them he started setting fires at 12. So at 12, he lit the house of a schoolmate on fire. Now, what you have to understand is he was 12. He went to a school for like handicapped kids.
Okay.
So there was a wide age range. Because at first when I read this, I didn't understand it. Because the boy that was the schoolmate was 6. His name was Richard Ellerington. And he was 6 years old. And it doesn't really give necessarily a reason why he went after him, just
You
that's
just
just who
did.
he went after. Set the fire in the middle of the night. Most of the family escaped except Richard. Next, he went to the house of Bernard Smith, who was 72. He was reclusive. He was starting to get dementia a little bit, and he mostly stayed in one room of his home. Paraffin was again used to set the fire, and Bernard died in the fire. Then he went to the home of David Brewer, who was 34. He was at home because of a work injury, and he was like partially incapacitated. He was having a little bit of trouble getting around. I don't have full details on what the injury was, but he fell asleep on the couch, and he woke up on fire. Peter went into the house, doused him in paraffin, and set him on fire.
Wow.
He survived for 8 days, but
Oh.
he never was able to talk before he died.
I'm just not sure. I
So,
want to live it for 8 days after that.
no,
It's
no.
kind of almost sounding like it sort of a pseudo angel of mercy kind of killing.
No, it's not. One of the things, like, so, Hastie, he had a an issue, like a grudge with.
Right.
David Brewer, he also had a grudge with, but I don't know exactly why. It just said that there was, like, he knew him and there was an issue there.
Got it.
I think he had, like, given him crap about something in the neighborhood or something. But the others, I really don't have a lot of reasons. Elizabeth Rokar, she was next. She was 82. She was also in her living room sleeping when the fire started, and she unfortunately passed away. And initially, this fire was blamed on her smoking. So, again, that seems to be the case a lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, next was a baby, Andrew Edwards, who was 1 year old. 1 year old. He was being babysat by his grandmother, and she put him upstairs in his crib to go to bed. And him, the two other grandkids were downstairs playing, and she saw that there was a fire in the cupboard where the kids were.
Mm-hmm.
And she grabbed him and ran outside.
Forgetting the baby.
Forgot the baby.
Oh.
Which, you can't, like, part of me is like, how the fuck could you forget the baby? But the other part of me is like, you're panicked.
Yeah.
You're terrified.
You see the immediate children.
It's not
children.
Like your child. It's your exactly. grandchild who you're not used to having at your house.
Right.
So I can kind of get it. But she actually later killed herself because they kind of blamed it on one of the grandkids, and she felt fully responsible for the baby's death.
I'm sure.
So that's kind of sad.
That is really sad.
Next was 6-month-old Katrina Thacker. She died in her cot in the living room. Her mom had taken her sister to the bathroom, and Peter was at the fire that time, and the mother couldn't make it back to her.
Oh.
He had known the family, but he had had a falling out with them, I guess, because he kept walking into their house, like, uninvited.
Imagine
so
that.
They yelled at him, and I guess he got mad and thought a fire was the best thing to do.
What about just talking things out?
Crazy talk. Who does that?
I don't know.
Next was the Wensley Lodge, which was a residential home for older men in varying conditions. Like, some had dementia, some mm-hmm. were just elderly, you know, a whole bunch of different factors. A caretaker saw the fire in a room, and there was only one occupant in that room, and he was able to save him. But the fire spread so fast that it went through the first and second floors, and 11 men were killed.
Dang.
And I think this... No, it's not the last one, I lied. All right. Deborah Hooper, who was 13, and Mark Jordan, who was 7, they were next. This was a little convoluted, but hopefully you follow me. Deborah was mentally handicapped, and this was her home. Mark was a guest at the house. His family had been spending the night. Mark's father woke up to the fire, ran upstairs to tell the owners of the home.
Mm-hmm.
They, in turn, woke up their daughters and the other guests, like Mark, and they were trying to get everybody downstairs and out the door. Most of them managed to get out the front window. Two of the children were helped out, but then Mark turned back to help Deborah,
mm-hmm.
and they both died.
Oh.
Sadly. Next was Christine Dixon, who was 24, and her sons, Mark, who was 5, Stephen, who was 4, and Michael, who was 16 months. She was outside. She was talking to the neighbor. Her sons and her husband were in the house with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And her son wasn't her husband wasn't feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
So he was laying down. And she noticed smoke was coming out the window. So she ran into the house, grabbed the baby, ran the baby outside, and asked the neighbor to hold him, and went back in to get her husband and the kids. And they all got trapped.
Oh.
Her husband did escape. And he did survive, but he had significant burns.
I'm sure.
So each fire that Peter set was deemed an accident and was blamed on either the children or the residents.
At the time.
At the time, okay. Yeah, at the fires. Peter reportedly said to the investigators, "My master is fire."
Wow.
So he had some issues.
Yeah. It seemed like he mostly went after, like, older or incapacitated or challenged people, though.
I mean, maybe there was a bunch of kids, too. I mean, and no rhyme or reason. Like, we go back to, how could you just go set a fire, you know, on a house with people inside? Not that I understand burning down a vacant house, but if you're gonna freaking burn a house, at least burn a house that no one's in.
Exactly.
Even if it's not vacant, it's like someone's house, but no one's home.
Yeah.
But I got nothing. So January 1981, he pled not guilty to 26 counts of murder, but guilty to 26 counts of manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility, which is kind of like insanity, and 11 counts of arson. The Wensley Lodge fire was later deemed an accident, and his convictions were overturned. Now, I don't know why it was changed to an accident. On appeal, because of course you appeal, two counts of arson and three counts of manslaughter were overturned, but it doesn't tell me which ones. But all of his other convictions were concluded to be safe, meaning they were correct.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in a mental hospital since, and he has continued to say he's innocent, but any attempts he's had to throw out his convictions have been denied.
How do you admit, like, tell everybody, I did all of these fires, then say you're not guilty?
That happens a lot, though. I mean, like, you get confessions, and then they plead not guilty. And they'll say, I was coerced to confess, or in this case, they said, you know, he had issues, he had a low IQ, and he didn't know what he was saying, you know.
Yeah, seems but a little bit.
You killed a lot of people. I mean, you're not
and
talking
sure
about...
there's, like, details about those that only he could know, having, you know, actually
said
them.
Well, and the deformed arm and leg, like, later in his appeals, they were like, oh, his arm's deformed, he could never light a fire. Like, yes, he could.
Because I don't need both arms.
You, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here.
No.
But people with disabilities can do a whole lot more than you think they can.
Yes.
Especially if they were born that way, because they learn to adjust.
Yes.
And sure, I'm sure not everybody.
No,
but I think people don't give people with disabilities enough credit.
Agreed. 100%.
So,
I know I don't need both arms to start a fire, so I don't know why anybody else would.
Just saying.
Lighter only requires one hand.
So, that is our list of arsonists.
Wow, kind of crazy.
Who's the most interesting?
Oh. I mean, interesting is not a good word for these, because, I mean, again, I think I find the ones that are actually firefighters that end up being arsonists the most baffling.
Yeah. Yeah, they do surprise me. The one that I thought was crazy was the one with 40,000 acres burned. I mean, like I said, that picture from NASA, I mean, you just see the smoke coming up, and it's... That's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of land, and I can't even begin to imagine that.
No. I do like, though, in the one case, the guy was, he had to pay $90,000 restitution.
Yeah, and the problem with restitution is that the only money they can earn while they're in prison is very minimal.
Exactly.
So, restitution, it's more symbolic than it is anything else.
Yeah, but I like the symbolism.
Yeah, and if they have money, like, at that point, they will liquidate your assets.
Oh,
so
totally.
If you have a house, like, your house is getting sold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think probably others had to pay restitution as well, but it didn't necessarily say that. But I would be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah.
So, those were the ones I found while I was researching. I did avoid ones where it was, like, they set fire to controversial places like abortion clinics or, you know, it was a terrorist act.
Right.
Or you set a fire to intentionally kill your family.
Yeah.
Like, your family.
Yeah.
Not just some family.
Brandis.
I didn't want to go over... Those, to me, are different than an arsonist.
Agreed. With sole motivation just to set fires.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Who just like fire for whatever reason. But they like it just a little too much. All right. Well, that's it, I think. So, thanks for listening.
And I guess we will see you in a couple weeks.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you guys for listening. We have a new Facebook page called Crime Bitches Countdown. Bitches is spelled with the number one because, you know, you can't say bitches on Facebook. So it's spelled B, number one, T-C-H-E-S. We appreciate any comments or feedback you have for us. Leave us a message. We'll get back to you. We also have an email address, crimebitchescountdown@gmail.com. Bitches spelled the same way with the number one instead of an I. Like I said, we appreciate any feedback. We'd love to hear what you think, good, bad, or indifferent. So please feel free to message us. We'll get back to you. Thanks.